again. This is Andrea Schwartz with another segment of the Chalcedon Foundation's Law and Liberty podcast. Today I have the privilege and pleasure of interviewing Bill Hyde of the Henty Alive Project, an audio theater designed to awaken children's love of learning, history, and adventure. Bill is an entrepreneur and president and CEO of Solutions in Science. He's got many interests and business pursuits to his credit. However, when he had the opportunity to invest his time and resources, he didn't go to the stock market. Instead, he decided to invest in something that would address a situation that was near and dear to his heart. As a grandparent, he noted that today's children are living in a world that is increasingly bombarding them with visual imagery. And the effect of all this visual imagery, whether it's coming from television, video games, or online videos, and all other kinds of image-based education and entertainment, really creates a world that's highly artificial and quite literally shuts down their imagination. So he wanted to do something about that, make his contribution to the effort to turn things around, and the result is the audio presentation Under Drake's Flag, which is possibly the most ambitious audio undertaking since Narnia. Bill, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Andrea. Thanks so much for having me.
So start from the beginning and tell our listeners, how did the Henty Alive Project get birthed, and a little bit about what the whole process has been for the last couple of years that you've been working on it?
Well, I have to go back a little bit further, and I have to go back when I was 19 years old and got married at a very early young age and started getting the cassette tapes from Chalcedon that came from Russia and in many cases came from Otto and other folks that were on the Easy Chair Committee. And it really changed my focus. You can imagine as a young 19-year-old, newly married, you don't have a lot of direction in life. I needed some direction, and I really found it through Rushdie's work. So this goes way back, and this is the culmination. The ideas for living, the ideas for understanding history are really go way back to the early days. I don't know if you remember those days when those cassettes were coming out, but I lived for those cassettes in those days.
Well, I remember them because I was pretty new to Chalcedon. And what it was, for people who don't know who Bill's referring to with Otto Scott, who was a staff person at Chalcedon and a writer and historian in his own right. And he and Dr. Rushdoony would spend a lot of time comparing notes, comparing their histories. And I remember where I first heard of Henty as a writer when they were talking about books that had sparked their imagination as young boys. And both of them put the Henty books, which up until that point I had never heard about, at the top of their list.
Well, like a lot of great men, they had read those books and Churchill and among others. Henty has affected a lot of folks. And I think one of the reasons we chose G.A. Henty was to, as a basis for the format, what we wanted to do. I wanted to bring in a different generation. So I thought, Andrea, from where I sit, we've kind of lost our sense of history. We've lost our mores in that sense. I think that's a common theme on your talks. What I wanted to do was find a period of time that really hadn't been affected by heavy modernity and postmodernism. So you didn't have this radical skepticism, this radical cynicism of everyone during the Victorian period. As you know, Queen Victoria probably was one of the first leaders that really said, hey, let's go back to the family. She beat Dr. Dobson by quite a ways with her focusing on the family. She decided to homeschool her kids. She made her kids clothes and so forth as queen over England. And she, Andrea, this is so fascinating because she was one of the most, if not the most powerful person in the world. And she chose to not really retreat, but prioritize her life and prioritize her family in the way that her faith told her to. So Henty was a product of that same culture, really unaffected by what we have now. And I think that's kind of the dangerous thing when we wanted to do this project Under Drake's Flag and Henty Alive. We wanted to say, what is it that we can do? What sort of writer can we go back to? And I remember Rush talking about Henty. Who can we find that can tell this story in a way that's just been unaffected? We really almost have a disease, I think, today with respect to our view of history and our view of culture. So I really found a gold mine in Henty, and I thought it was the perfect sort of matrix for what we wanted to do with Henty Alive and Under Drake's Flag, our newest production.
Well, on the website, hentyalive.com, you have some quotes, one from Albert Einstein and another from Napoleon, about the importance of imagination. Why don't you tell us a little bit about those views?
Well, one of the reasons for the audio drama, we could get our hands around audio drama and do that's something that we could do. It's a little tough for me to be able to, from my financial position, to be able to compete with Despicable Me or big visual productions in that way. But as you said earlier, I think from my view, I've got children and grandchildren. One of the most interesting things for me, I just see this over bombardment of imagery take its place. So we didn't want to create a medium to tell the story, to try to bring history alive. We didn't want to use a medium that was sort of contributing to the problem. And we thought that with audio, Philip Telfer, by the way, lives right up the road from me and did this video, Captivated, that won this in San Antonio. The whole theme of this thing is how many hours our kids are in front of screens. I think it's 50 hours a week now our kids are in front of screens. What happens is it really shuts down growth of the brain. It shuts down certain brain chemicals. Just when visual does all the heavy lifting, it literally shuts the mind down, and it's even more pronounced in young people, people whose minds are growing, our children. If we bombard them with the visual, their brain stops working because the heavy lifting, the imagination, all that, it's already been done. But what is there to do? And if you watch Despicable Me, it's all done for you. So we felt like the audio format was a wonderful way for us to tell a story.
Well, on the site, you said this quote from Albert Einstein, imagination is more important than knowledge. And Napoleon said, imagination rules the world. Do you think those are, I mean, you put them on your website. How do you believe those are true?
I think that when people have the ability to imagine what they might do with what God's given them, that can be a very powerful thing. There's a lot of folks, especially folks in our world, Andrea, that are sort of propositionalists. In other words, they're heavy laden with knowledge. A lot of Reformed folks, I have a lot of friends. What we like to do is sit around and argue propositions. And I think folks like Henty, folks like Drake, they had their knowledge base, but with respect to what they thought could be done, it wasn't really boxed in. Their minds were open to what actually could be accomplished. And I think with God, anything can be accomplished. So I think that's what drives those quotes.
Give us a short biography. I know he was a very accomplished man, but on Henty, who was Henty, and what was his life history about that made him able to write, I don't know, 30, 40 books. I don't know how many actually there were, but they're quite a lot.
Well, he was a master storyteller, and many of your listeners probably already know about Henty, but his life is an interesting one. He was a war correspondent during the Crimean War. I think as a result of a lot of that journalistic experience, he later became a great storyteller. He started writing back, covering the conditions of the war, and he wasn't always friendly to the English government. He wasn't always friendly necessarily to the publications. So he had his own independent way of looking at things. And as he wrote and described the horrors of war, more and more readers became attached. And I think it got to the point where the papers probably couldn't fire him very easily just because he got the leadership because of how dramatic he told the story. All of his writings, he was able to just jump in, become immersed totally in his subject matter, which was very easy to do when you saw the blood and gore from the Crimean War.
Of all the books, and I know he wrote on William Wallace, Robert E. Lee, Hannibal, he told the story of Jerusalem around A.D. 70. Why did you pick Sir Francis Drake?
Well, Drake is kind of a hero of mine, so that's I'm a little bit biased with respect to Drake. I think Drake is one of those guys whose story really wasn't told. I went to school and never learned about Sir Francis Drake. So his story, I felt, needed to be told. And I think Drake is an English hero. So the schoolboys in England really enjoy Drake. And I think when we went to do the recording for Under Drake's Flag, a lot of the older actors had got a lot of Drake early on. So Drake, at the time of his life, was probably one of the most important people on the planet. Folks would try to touch him. He had kind of an aura about him and a boldness about him and a pluck about him that was really unusual for his time, unusual for our time. So Drake is a bigger-than-life character, and I think it resonated well with Henty, who was a bigger-than-life character. and it certainly always interested me as a product of the Reformation. I think he became really somebody that we felt like, here's a guy that would go out and not just read or not just learn, not just have a knowledge base, but he would go apply that knowledge base, and he would apply the biblical stories that his dad had inculcated in him. His dad was Edmund, who was a lay preacher, Edmund Drake. They had 12 kids. He was the oldest of the 12, and he was preaching Protestantism at a time when King Henry VIII had changed the prayer book. And so there was a lot of back and forth, a lot between the Catholics and the Protestants in England, and they literally chased Edmund Drake and his family across England all the way over to the other side, to the Devon side, to the Plymouth side. And he grew up there. But his dad really loved the book of Romans. You can remember this. He's a product of the Reformation. This is taking place. He's growing up under Henry and later Elizabeth. So he really gets this idea, and he gets it well, about what the conflict and what the battle really is between Catholicism and Protestantism.
Continuing on with your description on this website, you said, so here's what I did to deal with this issue that I thought was affecting our children. You said, I took a group of employees, including my son, to London and reproduced Henty's adventure book Under Drake's Flag in audio theater format. Now, I know you, Bill, and I know that's not a surprising thing for Bill Hyde to do, because Bill Hyde has a vision and usually runs with it. But you have to admit, most people wouldn't have done what you did, and sparing no expense in the process. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the process to take the idea and turn it into a reality?
Well, the truth of it is I'm very inspired by Drake. In other words, I see Drake as a man unafraid to sail around the world. Remember, during his period of time, the ships were of the size that you couldn't really load them up with enough supplies to last. So here's a guy who, by faith, would go and island hop his way and try to buy provisions. And he really had a lot of faith in God to do that. So from my perspective, I think it's an act of faith, and it's one of those things that, as a culmination, as I've said before, of all the things that I've done, I really wanted to bring history alive. I feel like history's been stolen from us by the modernists and the postmodernists, and I really wanted to find a way to kind of bring living history to life. So when we had the opportunity, we had this book, we had Under Drake's Flag. It had to be adapted for the purposes of this audio theater, of this audio drama. So that, I got my family. I always like to get my family involved in everything that I do. So my family helped me with that, and some other people helped me with that. And we came up with this script, including adventures in Odyssey writer John Fornoff, who worked with us, added a little bit of professionalism to the thing. And we decided, hey, we're just going to do this. So we went over, got the sound design theater over in London, and went to work. The same casting director and a lot of the same actors that were in Narnia. I can't speak to what it's like, Andrea, to be a woman. Obviously, as a man, I have no idea what it's like to give birth to a child. But I know now what it's like to be in labor for 16 months, because this took everything out of me, heart and soul, and including most of my savings, to try to pull this off. And it was just, not only was it hard, not only was it arduous, but it was a lot of fun as well. So there's a lot of joy to this, because I felt like the history that we're bringing to life is worth it. Drake is a man worth knowing, and the adventure story is a story worth knowing.
Well, just for the record, I don't know too many women who spent 16 months in labor, so you may have beat us. I'm not sure.
I've got the record, maybe. Who knows?
You hired what you said were the finest English actors available, some of whom were from Shakespearean theater, but you managed to find an actor who has one of the most amazing voices, who is your narrator. Tell us a little bit about him.
Well, casting Brian Blessed as Henty, as the narrator, as Henty himself, was just one of those magical things. Sometimes, as you know, you were saying, hey, you decided to do this, and there's some degree that's a little bit mechanical. But there's sometimes things happen, and when Philip, our casting director, asked Brian, and he said, oh, of course, it turns out he had read the Henty books. So it was a natural fit, and a lot of these actors had read the books. So Brian was an amazing guy to have, because when Brian walks into the room, the energy level goes up 100 decibels. I mean, everything changes when this man's in the room. And over in England, he's very famous in a lot of movies over there. He's been in a lot of movies in this country. But over there, he's a friend of Queen Elizabeth, not the original Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Elizabeth today. He's a personal friend. And so he regaled me with a lot of stories about hanging out at the palace and so forth. And that was just beyond what I'd ever hoped for, to get Brian Blessed on the team.
Well, you sent me a preview link, which I listened to over the course of a weekend. The whole production, I believe, is about 2 hours, but I wasn't able to devote the 2 hours. So at first I did the first part, and then I had to go someplace. But I was extremely torn, because I really got attached to these characters. And as I got to the end of the second hour, when I resumed listening, I stopped it a couple of times because I didn't want them to go away. It's kind of how I was as a child when I'd read a book. And I'd be like, oh, no, okay, I'm going to slow this down because this book is going to be over. But it truly was very lifelike, and I felt like a kid again. And anybody who would ever say the Henty book's just for boys, I quite wholeheartedly disagree. There's something for everybody in this production, and it was really a lot of fun.
Here's the thing. We tried to – there is this idea of theology behind this. We wanted to bring in a Reformation character. We wanted the story to be told by someone who was telling a clean story, not a postmodernist. And yet there's a lot of histories from this, from Drake's life, that I wanted to share with people. Just the boldness, just the ability to take a step, knowing that God's got your backside. So this idea of providence looms large. All of that theological talk that Rush did so well. The other side of it, of course, I wanted it to be fun, and that's the part that you picked up on. I'm glad you had fun, because what good is this if the kids don't like it? You can't jam something down anybody's throat anymore, and so we wanted this to be enduring, and we wanted it to be just a lot of fun, and it really is a rip-roaring, swashbuckling adventure.
Well, just watching the video trailer, it looked like the actors were having a lot of fun doing it as well.
Oh, they had a blast. Just in the studio working together was an amazing experience for me, because some of these folks are very accomplished actors, and we had all ages there, and there was just a great mix, a lot of great interaction. And then you get this idea, this goes back to this imaginative concept that we were talking about earlier. When you get in the studio, you've got a script, but what happens oftentimes is great actors can take that script and say, hey, Bill, what if I said it this way? What if I did it this way? And so there's this concept of synergy that kind of took over once we were in the studio. And it's something, as maybe a non-artist, I wouldn't have anticipated, because life is pretty linear for me. But we definitely had some very magical moments during the recording.
Okay, now you said that it would be possible to have some clips.
Okay, so the clip that I want you to hear right now is what I think, Andrea, the world's only audio drama shark scene.
Gerald, was that my imagination? Or did I just...
That was definitely a girl.
There she is. She cannot swim.
She is a Spaniard.
I will not watch her die.
No!
Ned! Stop! Stop, I see a shark! What? Where?
He just circled around. He's going back for her.
No,
Ned, you must not.
Not to worry. I have my father's dagger.
Ned, no!
Off I go! Stop!
Okay, so that's one of the adventure sequences, one of the scenes from this thing. It's got battle scenes, there's cannonballs whizzing past your head if you listen to this. It is Henty at his best.
Well, I know that thanks to this production, where I normally spend about 20 minutes and I'm constantly looking at the clock to say, okay, exercise is over, I put in my 20 minutes. By the time I was done, I realized that I had effortlessly gone through an hour as I listened to the first segment. And at the very end, I was thinking, I sure hope there are more of these.
Well, there's another one in the works. We're working right now. You mentioned William Wallace. The next one that we're working on is In Freedom's Cause, which is the William Wallace story, and it's going to be another big story. So we're very excited about that. And we're excited about Under Drake's Flag. We want people to go. You can listen to it for free, the first part of it for free, just because we feel like this is kind of an unusual offer, an unusual business for me. I've never done this before. So I thought, well, you know what? People need to be able to, they don't want to just hear that I'm recommending it, that it's good. They should go check it out for themselves, and they can experience a little bit of that. If they like what they're listening, then they can go online or into a Christian bookstore at some point. We're working there and make a purchase of the whole production. What's even cooler, I think, is we've created a 28-page study guide that goes along with this, that takes parents through this, allows for questions to be asked, for some back and forth, some words to be defined, words that are used that in this culture that maybe aren't used in our culture, and it just allows you to go back into history, I think, in a little more of a meaningful way. Because there's ethics here. There's metaphysics here. There's epistemology here. There's kind of whatever the parent wants to do with it. We've made that very, very much a learning tool by virtue of the study guide. I'm as excited about the study guide as being part of it as I am about the actual production, because I know sometimes parents need a little bit of help here and there to kind of get conversations going, to start conversations and so forth. So we're very excited about that.
Well, I'm no longer homeschooling little ones, but it makes me sort of, I wish I was. So my son and grandson are going to get this as a combination birthday gift, because I know the CDs are about to ship pretty soon. But what I really appreciated about it is you didn't dumb down the material. It would have been so easy to say, well, this is a word most people won't understand, or things of that nature. And you didn't make the young boys in it airheads. These were responsible young men, young boys who grow into men in the course of it, and you really see that happening, or hear that happening, I should say. And I think it's a really good antidote to the touchy-feely, feministic approach to young men that's so blatant in our culture.
Well said, and that is one of the motivating factors for this, is to develop young men and young women that have kind of a perspective of life and history that has what we say is pluck over there in England, and that's a word I picked up. You have to have a sense of pluck. It takes a bit of pluck to go over to England and pull this off. It takes a bit of pluck to circumnavigate the earth. It takes a bit of pluck to go into the Crimean War. All of these things, I think a lot of our young people are lacking, and that's because I think that heroes have been stolen as part of history being stolen. We don't even teach history in school anymore. We teach social studies, which I think Vladimir Ilyich Lenin's wife, we can give her credit for that. It's where the history on that goes. And I think just real history and not humanistic history. This is what Rush taught me from his work when I especially influenced Andrea by a biblical philosophy of history. Here's a quote from him that has been with me for a long time and really sort of gave me some guidance and direction with respect to what you just said. He said, "Humanistic history is a shaking and frail ladder, resting on no foundation and reaching out into nothingness, whereas history under God rests," and here you go, this is what I love, "and rests in total meaning and purpose and gives man a glorious inheritance and destiny." And it is within that framework that we did Under Drake's Flag. That's what I want young people to get from this. This is an inheritance. Drake is an inheritance. God has given him to us as a hero. Is he a perfect man? Of course he was not a perfect man. He was a man with many, many flaws. And the beauty of Christian history is, just like the Bible, we can take someone with flaws and say, there's his sinful flaws. If you look at all of the other histories that existed in the ancient world, most of them, as you know, were court histories that were just puff pieces for this king or that king. The reality in the Bible is the reality that we tried to pull off with Drake. Here's a real man in time and space, and he's someone that we can pay attention to. He's someone that we can say, here's what he did right, here's where he may have messed up. And he's someone, I think, his life, the fruits of his life are huge, are of epic proportion.
And I think, along that line, it's important to realize whatever is good about any of these people in history, a result of their application of their faith to their life. Since we all acknowledge that nobody is without sin until they're fully sanctified, we shouldn't sit in judgment. Rush used to say, you have to understand that people were people of their times. And You and I are people of our times. 100, 500 years from now, people might look back and say, gee, how inconsistent Andrea Schwartz was. She said this, but there are parts of her life where she did this. So, yes, we don't expect our heroes to be flawless, but we appreciate it when we see them applying the faith to their life.
Let me give you a couple of good examples of that. One is when Drake was young, he went on a couple slaving missions with his cousin, and he found them to be reprehensible. And so people, if you go Wikipedia Drake, they'll say, well, Drake was a slaver and a pirate and this and that. His dad pounded this concept of justice into him and what the righteousness of God was through the book of Romans and when he was a young man. And I think he finally got to the point where he just didn't have the stomach for it, and he gave it up. He said, I can't be a slaver. And so he gave it up. What happened to him in the process of that, not only did he give up slavery and give up sort of this idea of one race being vastly superior to another race, he spent the rest of his career, I would say, pioneering race relations. And he was hundreds of years ahead of his time in treating Indians, women, and blacks. And I'll tell you a little bit of the story about what happened to him sailing down off the coast of Africa. He was running out of food, and he went ashore to buy food. And this was, as I said earlier, just something that he did all of the time because you couldn't put enough food in a boat to make it in a lot of the voyages where he went. And he came across the tribe that instead of having food to sell him, he came across the tribe who was totally destitute without anything. And they were going through a famine or something. I can't really remember exactly what happened. So he said, wow, it looks like you need food more than I do. And here's what the providence of God allows you the freedom to do. Providence and predestination gives freedom that other philosophies don't. He said, you know, God's going to cover me, so I'm not going to worry about myself. So he went back to his ship. He got what little provisions he had left. He took them and gave them to the villagers and said, here, you need this food more than I did. He got back in his boat and said, you know what? God will take care of me as I sail down this coast. I'm not too worried about the existential moment. I just know that God will do something good for me. And of course, he found food down the road a little bit as he went down along the coast. So, but those are two examples. One sort of almost, you know, begat the other. He looked at slavery. At first, he said with Hawkins, his cousin, well, we're going to go make some money with slaves. And he said, you know what? I can't do this. And during the process of that, God changed his heart in such a way he went above and beyond. We have a lot of the records from even Spanish prisoners, Andrea, where he was captured. And when they released a Spanish prisoner after being captured, a lot of times they had them give affidavits because they wanted to document Drake being cruel to people. And here he had given a lot of them money after he released them. So whether it's treating people well who were of races maybe at the time, not up to where the English thought they were, or whether it's treating prisoners well, he took biblical concepts and he brought them into his life. His theology flowed out of his fingertips. It's an amazing story.
I agree, and I especially thought it was timely, the portions of the audio drama where he's telling his men to not violate women. If somebody is surrendering, you don't shoot them. And the idea was that it was going to be defensive, not offensive. A very important topic for our day.
Gee, maybe we can send a copy of this to the White House. I'm not sure. But that was Sir Francis Drake. He reminded me so much, Andrea, of Washington. I know Rush loved Washington, and here's why he loved him. He wouldn't allow any gambling, and neither would Drake. So he wouldn't allow when they went to shore, Drake that is, he wouldn't allow them to go to houses of ill repute. He wouldn't allow drunkenness. And so he actually prayed three times a day on the ship with his men. And here's a thing that not many people know. He was a friend of John Fox, of Fox's Book of Martyrs fame, and he would read Fox's Book of Martyrs to his men on the ship. So he loved history, too. And he particularly wanted to point out those points in history, like the Spanish Inquisition and other things, that he felt like justice wasn't being served. So he was a man that wanted always to see justice. And that really spoke well, I think, of him. And it's just another lesson that we can learn from his life where he took these biblical concepts and he just used them.
One of the most amazing parts at the end and I wasn't expecting it because I had not read this Henty book, was The Prayer of Sir Francis Drake. And you and I have talked a little bit about having this be something that parents should truly encourage their children to memorize and learn how to present, because there are so many subjects covered, and his humility and his petitioning of the Lord is really quite remarkable.
Well, it's obedience and this imagination concept. I'll just read the first stanza. And he says, "Disturb us, Lord, when we are too pleased with ourselves, when our dreams have come true, because we've dreamed too little, when we arrive safely, because we sail too close to the shore." So what Drake is saying here that so enlivens and animates me is, look, the God of providence is the same God that's guiding your ship when you're sailing along the shore and you can see the shore. But it's the same God. If you go out into the deepest, most perfect storm in the deepest ocean, it's God there too. And Drake knew no difference between the shore and seeing with his eyes. And he knew that God was in charge of his destiny when he was out in the middle of the ocean and he didn't know where he was. So again, as I said earlier, that allows you a lot of freedom to do things you couldn't do if you think you're in charge of every little thing. Drake's prayer is something worth putting on a plaque. It's something worth memorizing. It's an amazing, amazing prayer.
And as one biographer put it, without Sir Francis Drake, the United States as we know it today wouldn't exist. So we owe a lot to a man who very few people know the truth about.
Let me tell you why that is, why we wouldn't exist, why this country wouldn't exist. At the time, the Spanish Main, the Spanish Armada controlled the seas from southern part of this country all the way down, really through South America. The Pope at the time had given both North and South America to Spain and Portugal. So these were the properties of other countries. And what Drake did, almost single-handedly, he took down 93 ships. And to me, that would be the equivalent of some Russian kid taking down the U.S. Navy with a couple ships. It's just almost unheard of. And he took them down, and what he did was sever this artery, because they would have, this was really Spanish country. So he even helped to establish the Roanoke colony, the failed Roanoke colony, but he helped provide the utensils and the eating utensils and stuff for that colony, as he worked with Sir Walter Raleigh and others. But his story, he's, as far as I'm concerned, he had the same pluck as the Pilgrims. He had that same gritty faith and determination as the Pilgrims, and it created something. There was fruit from that pluck.
Well, your love of history is contagious, and I'm hoping that this project not only nets you lots of sales so that you could produce more dramas, but the other side of it is giving families an opportunity to share history together and sort of get the enthusiasm that you have if they don't already have it. So tell me, how do people get a hold of Under Drake's Flag?
Well, of course, they can go to HentyAlive.com and watch some of the trailers that we have on there, look through some of the stuff. We've got some amazing comments from it, some rave reviews already. And then you can go down to the bottom. We've got a couple different offers. We've got one that where you can just buy the single. We've got another pack, a family four-pack, that has all kinds of bonuses, including John Campbell, again, who John did the music for Narnia. John did the soundtrack. And here's another first for us. We have the very first audio drama soundtrack that you get as a bonus when you buy that larger package, and John just finished that up. So we're trying a few things different. We've got a book, my new book on Drake just came out. That's a free bonus in there. So there's lots of little things that you can get free. We've got lots of T-shirts, Drake T-shirts and stuff on the website. There's lots of things for folks to read about and enjoy.
Well, I've made use of that. As soon as I saw what you'd get for that bonus, as I told you, I handled some presents that are on my, what do you get when you've gotten people everything that you wanted to get them? Well, this is a great treasure. And so I sincerely hope that our listeners go to HentyAlive.com. And one last thing before I let you go, Bill, is there any way that if people want to do more than just purchase this, are you looking for potential investors?
Oh, definitely. Thank you for asking. We'd love to have folks join us in this. It's not cheap to do it. So anyone that has a heart for history, anybody that's thinking that the world has been captured by the postmodernists and the atheists and the humanists can join me in this great battle. It's like trying to circumnavigate the earth. We've got a lot of henty books to do and a lot of history to tell, and I would love to have someone, you know, walking with me on the project. So if you're interested in investing in it, if you'd like to contribute and know more about that, you can definitely send me an email. My email is bheid@hughes.net, B-H-E-I-D at hughes.net, and you can send me an email, and I can give you a call back, and we can chat about it.
Excellent. Well, this has been fun, Bill, and you promised that I'd be able to add another track or two at the end for people to listen to. I hope to have you back to talk a little bit about your next project when it's done, when you've given birth once again.
Now, I just want to say to you, Andrea, thanks so much for what you do for Calcede and keeping these hopes alive. That means a lot to all of us that are listeners as well.
Well, Dr. Rushdoony gave us a legacy that said the victory is ours, and the only limitation that we have is if we fail to apply God's law to our life, then we won't be able to adventure out into the high seas like Sir Francis Drake. So I think that those who are listening today will count you among the true heirs of R.J. Rushdoony.
Well, thank you. That's probably the greatest compliment that anybody's given me. And Leah, let's join together. Let's be faithful stewards, and let's not be afraid to do great things.
His name?
Ned Hawkshaw.
And he's about to take the greatest adventure a boy could ever imagine with one of the most celebrated heroes in history.
My name is Francis Drake.
Confronting the fiercest dangers.
She cannot swim.
No.
Ned! Stop, I see a shark!
Ned, no!
Off I go!
Stop!
Fire away, Ned!
He'll come face to face with evil itself.
We arrest you in the name of the Holy Inquisition. Oh.
You have 1 hour to recant your faith.
A story that pits faith against fear.
Heavenly Father, where are you?
And turns Ned from a boy into a man.
I may be young, but I will not bow before the Spaniards.
Don't miss Under Drake's Flag on the extraordinary adventures of G.A. Henty.
Until next time, this is Andrea Schwartz of the Law and Liberty Podcast.